Funding for this talk comes from TrialX, connecting patients to clinical trials.
Good afternoon and welcome to Cure Talks. I'm Priya Menon, scientific media editor of Cure Talks, joining you from India. This is Cure Talks 107th episode, and today we are talking about multiple myeloma. On the myeloma panel today, we have patient experts and myeloma advocates, Jack Aiello and Matt Goldman. My co-host for the evening is myeloma survivor and advocate Gary Peterson, editor of MyelomaSurvival.com. Welcome to Cure Talks. Recent introduction of new therapies has significantly improved outcomes for patients diagnosed with multiple myeloma. However, cures remain rare in myeloma, and most people may eventually relapse. If we want to better understand how and why myeloma grows back, there is hope that relapse can be prevented and thereby eventually improve long-term outlook for myeloma patients. The myeloma panel is talking to Dr. William Matsui of Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine on why relapses occur after several years of remission and how they can be prevented. Dr. Matsui is professor and director, Multiple Myeloma Program, Sidney Kimmel Comprehensive Cancer Center at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Welcome to Cure Talks, Doctor.
Hello, thanks for having me.
We will be addressing questions from the audience towards the end of the discussion. If you have a question for our panel, please press 1 on your keypad to let us know and we will bring you on air. You can also email your questions to priya@trialx.com or post them on curetalks.com. With that, I will hand over to Gary to begin with the discussion. Gary, over to you.
Yes, thank you very much, Priya, as always, for providing this very important forum, and Dr. Matsui for, you know, kind and generous with your time. Dr. Matsui is the has a degree from Harvard College. He has a doctorate from the University of California, San Francisco. He has also completed his internship and residency in internal medicine at the University of Washington in Seattle, and a fellowship training in medical oncology at Johns Hopkins University. All of these names of these universities have an excellent history in the world of multiple myeloma. At the completion of his fellowship in 2002, he joined the facility as an assistant professor at Sidney Kimmel Comprehensive Cancer Center, Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. He was subsequently promoted to the rank of associate professor in 2008. His current research is focused on normal and cancer stem cell biology, his laboratory, and he has his own laboratory named after him, which is an honor. His laboratory identified tumor-initiated cells and plasma multiple myeloma in 2004. He has subsequently found these cells share similar cellular characteristics with normal stem cells. Dr. Matsui has been awarded the George Santos Research Award from the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And there's so many other things that he has done and accomplished over his career that it would take entirely too long to mention all of them. So we do welcome you, Doctor, for taking part in this presentation. And we've got a number of people that are going to find this new and exciting. So thank you.
Thanks,
Dr. Matsui, you are doing some cutting edge research in identifying myeloma stem cells as the main cause of myeloma relapse. You believe we can cure myeloma if we can focus treatments to this cancer stem cell. Could you please explain this theory?
Sure. So the theory is that there are certain tumor cells that are different from all the other tumor cells. So, and the way that you can distinguish them is that some of the tumor cells have a specific function, and that's not shared with all the tumor cells. So the function that we're interested in is the ability to maintain growth over long periods of time. So that's one property of normal stem cells. And so, for example, in your bone marrow, you have hematopoietic stem cells, and they're there for your entire life, and their job is to make blood for your entire life. So in tumors, what we believe is that there are cells that actually fuel the tumor and fuel growth of the tumor, and it's not a property that is shared by all of the cells. It's actually just a minority of cells. Just like in the bone marrow with normal stem cells, they're a vast minority, a very small percentage of all the cells in the bone marrow. So what we've been trying to do is figure out what these cells are and how they're different from the rest of the myeloma cells and ways of trying to target them. And our hopes are that if these are the sort of the factory that lead to relapse, that if we control those, then after we achieve remissions, then maybe what we can do is prevent relapse from occurring.
So is there a way of determining whether, you know, like, for example, they have minimal residual disease measures, which people were believing would, you know, if you have a low level of residual disease, that, you know, you can pretty much cure myeloma. Whereas I think what you're saying is that it doesn't matter what you do with residual disease if you still have latent stem cells, or would these stem cells show up as residual disease as well?
You know, I think that we don't know. I think that with new technology, you can detect very small numbers of tumor cells. The primary way that it's done these days is by doing DNA sequencing, and that's probably the most sensitive way to do it. And the stem cells and the plasma cells that make up the tumor, you know, they share the same genetic components, so you couldn't tell just by DNA sequencing whether or not you're dealing with the stem cell as MRD or as just residual bulk tumor cells. So there is a relationship. I think that, you know, one of the properties, one of the thoughts is that in myeloma, stem cells may be very different in the way that they act from the rest of the tumor, and so they may be differentially sensitive to certain chemotherapies. So if we think about the chemotherapies that we use in myeloma, and we think about ones that are curative, then, you know, stem cells, even if you go into remission, they have to survive that chemotherapy somehow. So even if they're very low in number, you know, they have this potency to grow back the entire tumor. And so one of the things we thought about very early on was how are they more resistant to the drugs that we normally give myeloma patients, and, you know, is there some other way that we could attack them?
And did you find other ways?
So one of the thoughts is that plasma cells, which are the differentiated, you know, which are the cells that are the myeloma cells, occur in us normally. They're, you know, they're not an anomaly of the disease. You have many more of them in the disease. The plasma cells themselves normally don't make new plasma cells. They come from an earlier compartment in which are B cells. So B cells are the component, that arm of your immune system where antibodies are made, and in myeloma that manifests as your M protein. And so one way to think about it is that, like, in your skin, you have a upper layer of skin, and then you have skin stem cells, which are deeper down in the skin. And the upper layer of of skin cells is there to protect you, and they're actually not even alive. But they come from a deeper compartment of stem cells that remain. And so it's not as if, you know, the dead skin cells on the surface can make more cells. They do their job, which is protecting you, but they come from a different source. And so what we think is that in myeloma, the plasma cells may not be making more plasma cells. It may be just as in the normal system, it may be B cells that make plasma cells. And B cells are actually the cell type that is the prominent tumor cell type in lymphomas, in many lymphomas. So there are many things that many drugs that have been designed to treat lymphomas. So one of the things we've been actively doing is to see whether the cancer therapies that can treat lymphomas are also something that we can use to treat myeloma, because we think that the stem cells in myeloma and look very similar to those that are lymphoma cells. So that's one of the ways we've been trying to get at this question. And one of the things is that there's a lot of controversy in the field about myeloma stem cells, and there are a few things that people agree on, and there are things that people disagree on. I think most people agree that there must be something like a stem cell that leads and drives relapse of the disease. But the controversial part is, what is it that they actually look like? Do they look like B cells? Do they look like plasma cells? Do they look like something in between? That's where most of the controversy lies, is what is their phenotypic appearance. But I think that everyone believes that there's some stem cell somewhere, no matter what it looks like, because if you didn't have that, then you likely wouldn't relapse.
You know, and it's probably my ignorance, but I had thought originally that stem cells were like this mother cell, if you want to call it that, that it was something that was unique. A stem cell was a hematological stem cell, and it could kind of hang out and be anything. If you want it to be a blood cell, it could be a blood cell. If you want it to become a liver cell, it would be a liver cell. If you want it to be, and as a result, you know, I recently looked at eurostemcell.org. They wrote an article saying there's different theories to explain tumor growth. And they said one is cancer stem cell theory, and the other is a stochastic model of cancer growth. And the stochastic model assumes kind of this normal king, if you want to call it, that stem cell that can be anything, and it can create plasma cells or anything else, has an equal chance of becoming cancerous, and there are no cancer stem cells. Why do you believe stem cells exist, and is the correct approach?
Right, like I think that there are sort of two ways to think about it. One is really just a functional sort of definition, and it's something like in normal stem cells, in normal systems, right? There are multiple different kinds of stem cells. There are pluripotent stem cells, and like the pluripotent stem cell, right, is the cell that gets made when an egg and sperm come together, because that cell has to make every single part of your body, right? So it has sort of this vast differentiation potential. During adult life, it's thought that each sort of organ has its own stem cell. So like in the brain, there are neural stem cells that continually make different parts, different cells that make up the central nervous system. The hematopoietic system, I think, is the easiest one to understand, where there are stem cells that make all the different lineages in the blood. In the skin, there are stem cells. In the liver, there are stem cells. And it's not yet clear during, you know, adult life, whether or not stem cells from your liver can now become heart stem cells. Like, that's never really been shown. And so it's thought that every organ has their own complement of stem cells, and that complement is responsible for maintaining that organ and repairing it if the organ is injured. So one controversy about, and I think it's a misunderstanding about cancer stem cells, they're not cancerous stem cells, meaning that it doesn't mean that you need to have cancers that start in stem cells. Like even in leukemias, let's say, most leukemias do not start in a hematopoietic stem cell, a true hematopoietic stem cell, because if you get AML or myeloid leukemia, that if it was in a hematopoietic stem cell, then it should make lymphoid or B cells and T cells as well. So one part of the theory I think that is misunderstood is talking about the origin of cancer. Like do cancers originate in stem cells? It's an attractive thing to think that happens because they're the cells that are actually around long enough to acquire the mutations that you need to form a tumor. But in fact, we don't have much evidence. We don't have a great deal of evidence suggesting that cancers arise in the stem cells, either in the lung or the liver or the colon or the bone marrow, actually. So the other way to think about it is that cancer stem cells are an entity, but it doesn't describe sort of where they arise. It just describes their functional properties, and I think that the two greatest functional properties that are different from the other tumor cells are one is withstanding chemotherapy because they will survive that chemotherapy, and then the other is that they have this tremendous capacity to regrow tumors. So if it wasn't for them, right, and their special ability to grow, then, you know, you wouldn't have relapse. So I think that, like I said, I think that there are many theories about cancer, where cancer arises from. I think that the cancer stem cell theory doesn't describe where they come from within a normal organ. It just describes sort of the properties that contribute to the activity or the natural history of a cancer in a person.
Okay. Well, you've had some, I think, proof that they exist, right, by doing some research that showed that when you go after something that shouldn't work, like after a B cell, that when you look, you can actually see these stem cells, I assume, somehow, and you can see whether or not they are reduced, because one of the things that you mentioned was there was like a 50% reduction in one of the experiments or trials that you had completed.
Right. So something like that. So basically, we've done a couple of clinical trials, and those clinical trials have been there have been a couple of clinical trials that have used antibodies that are useful in lymphoma to try and test them in multiple myeloma. So the first one we did was a number of years ago, and it was using a antibody called rituximab, which is very commonly used in lymphomas as well as other leukemias. And that was, it was not successful. We did not prolong the time that people remained in a remission. But one of the things we learned from that trial is we developed a couple of different methods to count the number of stem cells in a person. So one was through the bone marrow, where we take the bone marrow and we just see how many sort of myeloma stem cells can grow, and that would be in an incubator or in a lab. And then the other is an assay where we actually use flow cytometry, which is this way of marking different cells. And we do this in the blood, so we try to identify myeloma stem cells in the blood. And so in the first trial, which was this trial with rituximab, like I said, we weren't clinically successful, but what we learned in that is that if you had myeloma stem cells that we were counting and they went up over time, so you're increasing the number of stem cells, those patients relapsed much, much quicker than if you had stem cells that stayed the same in their number or they went down over time. So we thought that there was some, you know, there's some relationship between what we were measuring and the time that people were in a remission. So then most recently we did a trial using a different antibody against B cells called MEDI-551. It's an antibody that's in clinical trials in lymphomas and leukemias. And what we found there was that we could actually see the stem cells go down in most patients, unlike our experience with rituximab. But in this trial, we only gave 3 doses of the antibody over 2 months. And so the trial itself was not designed to see how long the patients would be in a remission or whether they would go into a complete remission over time. It was basically just to see whether or not if we gave this antibody, was it safe to do in individuals with myeloma, and could we see evidence that the number of myeloma stem cells were going down. So that's what we were able to show, and that's a trial that we reported out at the most recent AACR meeting. And what we're trying to do now is build upon that and actually use that antibody for a longer period of time. And in the first trial, the trial we just completed, it was done in conjunction with Revlimid. And so what we would like to do is to use something more than that. And so the trial that we're thinking of doing is something where we do some type of transplant, really get the patients into remission, and then use the antibody after that to see whether we can keep them in a remission. So mm-hmm. I think that the proof that we have is really this correlation between, or this association between, do the numbers of them go up or down in an individual, and can that predict when the patients relapse? Because if you think, well, they're going up and they're growing, then you should see relapse happening quicker, and if you see them going down, then you should say it should take a longer time before the patients relapse. So that's the relationship we found. And I think the most compelling evidence that B cells are important in myeloma actually doesn't come from our lab at all. It comes from a group at the University of Pennsylvania. And what they've done is they've used T cells and they've engineered them to target a protein called CD19, which is only on B cells. It's not on myeloma plasma cells at all. And they've used these things called chimeric antigen receptor T cells or CAR T cells in patients with leukemia, and they've shown that you could eradicate leukemias using these cells. It's an immune-based therapy. So what they did was they actually tried to use these cells in myeloma, and so they gave patients a transplant, and then they gave them these cells right afterwards. And in a number of patients who had had a previous transplant who didn't go into a complete remission and had very short remissions, doing another transplant plus giving these cells actually made them go into very deep remissions. And so they're using a very powerful and a very precise way of targeting just B cells, and they were able to generate sustained and complete remissions in a number of patients. So really, I think that our stuff has been very correlative or very associative, but I think that, you know, the proof is you get rid of the cells and then you see what happens to the patient. And I think that the University of Pennsylvania group has actually been the strongest evidence that B cells are important in the disease.
Yes, it sounds like it. Or the early research you had talked about was at the University of California in San Francisco with leukemia. And have they made inroads into cure using cancer stem cell theory? And did they, you know, look at using these antibodies, leukemia, and then able to determine whether or not, you know, they had gone up or down and improved outcomes?
So it's funny because the cancer stem cell sort of hypothesis or the theory is really old, actually. It's quite old. it goes back to the 50s, and really the proof of the existence of cancer stem cells was in acute leukemia, in acute myeloid leukemia, and that was done by a group in Toronto run by an investigator named John Dick, and that was, he reported that they identified these cells in 1994, and subsequent to that, you know, we've identified them in myeloma. There have been other diseases, brain tumors, breast cancer, head and neck cancer. There have been many diseases where these things have been identified, but the one is, of the major issues is that none of that has been really translated out into clinical practice. So what I would say is that, like, our job, part of our job is to try to study these cells and understand how they grow and they're regulated. But another big part of what we should do is to actually prove that they're important in individuals. And so I think that in the cancer stem cell field, I think that we in myeloma are probably the most advanced at trying to figure out whether this theory is correct or not. I think that in breast cancer there have been some trials, in leukemia there have been some trials, but I don't think anyone's come close to the data that we have in myeloma, so I think we're far ahead of the curve. And but, you know, it's ironic, or it's interesting that, I think it just says that it's very difficult to take ideas from the lab and actually convert them into clinical trials, and then from clinical trials into something that is standardly used. And so, you know, a big part of our program is to try to get these ideas from now the clinic into the, or from the lab into the clinic, and then I think try to get as much data as we can so we can do more definitive trials moving forward. And that's sort of where we are right now.
Okay, and that kind of leads to my next and last question before we go on to the other panel members. For myeloma, you say it's very difficult to take it from the lab into the clinic. And have there, has this approach made it out of the lab and into the clinic yet? And if so, what have you found, and what are the plans for the future?
So we've done, like I said, some early phase trials. We did the trial with rituximab. We did the trial with MEDI-551. We've done one other trial using an inhibitor against the pathway called Hedgehog. And, the difficulty ends up being is this. For most drugs that we test in myeloma, the initial barrier to overcome, right? If you have a drug and you want to figure out whether it works, the initial thing you do is you give it to patients with advanced myeloma and you see whether or not their tumor burden goes down. So whether their M proteins go down, their light chains go down, whether the plasma cells are decreased in the bone marrow. So that is sort of the first hurdle to drug development in the disease. So if you said, look, I gave someone a drug and it didn't change the M protein, it didn't change the number of plasma cells, then I think most people would say, look, that drug is not going to work in the disease, right? So for us, one challenge is that we think that the stem cells in myeloma are like 1 in 100,000 to 1 in 1,000,000 of the tumor cells. So that frequency is so low that even if you targeted those cells, it's going to take you a while before you start to see things like the M protein go down and the plasma cells go down in number. Because if you're cutting off the factory, you still have to wait for all of those other progeny or all the mature cells to go away. So it may take a lot of time. And so one very big hurdle in drug development for cancer stem cells is, how do you know that they're working, right? Because the traditional measures that we use, like in myeloma, those things don't change for a long, long time. So trying to find partners or trying to find develop trials where you say, look, even if we are not making the M protein go down, we should continue to treat the patient. Like, that is a difficult sort of conceptual hurdle to overcome. And the same goes for all other cancer stem cell trials and other diseases that, you know, the things that are important to us, the things like the relapse rate, right, those are not the things that are traditionally looked at very early on in drug development that allow you to sort of say, well, there's this compound and we think it has some potential benefit in the disease. Because you're going to, if you give these compounds that target 1 in a million cells, you're not going to see the M proteins go down in a couple of weeks. It's just never going to happen. And so I think a lot of it is trying to convince, you know, the government, like the FDA, or drug companies that help us with our studies, pharmaceutical companies that help us with our studies, to design specific clinical trials where we can actually go and we can see whether or not there is an effect and whether or not we can try to look at that over a longer period of time. So that's sort of where we are right now. And, you know, one of the thoughts now is that if these cells are important in relapse, then what we should do is we should give patients medication in the setting where they might relapse. So after, let's say, after a transplant, and see whether or not you can prolong the time before that occurs.
And see whether or not you can reduce those stem cells.
Yes, exactly.
And somehow measure that. All right, well, thank you so much, Doctor. Jack, are
sure.
you online?
Yeah, I'm online, Gary.
Okay. Jack, your question?
Dr. Masui, thanks so much for being here. This is fascinating. I'm glad also I was going to ask you the question about kind of correlating the number of myeloma stem cells to plasma tumor cells, but you mentioned 1 in a million, and golly, sounds really difficult to find. When I attend myeloma conferences these days, I'm always struck by one of the slides that shows the plasma tumor cell being a circle made up of a pie slices of different colors, and maybe the predominant colors are blue, and as it progresses to cloning itself, the predominant color then becomes green, and those colors represent the characteristics that have somehow changed for a plasma cell, and perhaps explains why a treatment which did work originally is no longer effective. So my question is, can myeloma cells, stem cells, do the same thing, or are we already talking about myeloma stem cells when we're referring to myeloma clones? Can you expand on that?
Yeah, so I think that. So one of the things for sure that's been a very interesting finding, because we've developed, the technology has been developed that allows you to sequence every gene in a cell, right? Allows you to sort of see over time, are you dealing with the same genetically defined tumor? So if you're diagnosed and we sequence the tumor, you find specific mutations, you treat, and then when the patient relapses, you sequence again, and then when they go back, after they go back into remission and relapse again, you sequence again. So it's actually, it's interesting to see that every time you relapse, it may be a different clone that arises, and in some cases, what you see is that the clone that relapses is exactly the same as what you had in the beginning. In some patients, it's exactly the same, except that there are extra mutations when you relapse. And then in some patients, it's actually not a completely different set, but it's sort of a different set of mutations, suggesting that there was some other thing hiding out in the beginning that was just suppressed, and when you cleared out the tumor using some therapy, that thing was now allowed to grow because it was resistant. So I think the way that stem cells fit into that is that I think that every clone probably has a stem cell, and that allows it to expand over time. I think that we don't know when you progress over time. So let's say over many different rounds of therapy or different kinds of therapy. If tumors become more drug resistant, is that because you're gaining more mutations, or you just have a stem cell now that is resistant to everything? That is something we don't know at this point in time. I think that one of the things that's super interesting that comes out of looking at these clonal dynamics is that there's usually one that is dominant, right? And so it ends up being that, like the question is why is that one dominant? Like, what is it? Is it simply that it grows faster than the other ones to become the predominant one? Or is it that, like, one other theory, a theory that we have is that one clone can actually actively suppress the other one. So it's not just a matter of who's growing the fastest that wins. It's a matter of who can suppress the other clones the best. And so sometimes what you see in myeloma patients when they're newly diagnosed is they can have very incredibly smoldering disease, and you could use something like, you know, lenalidomide alone or with some dexamethasone, and it may not create a complete remission, but it keeps things at bay for a long, 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 long time. But then when you try to sort of get rid of everything, something comes back, and when it comes back, it grows much, much quicker than it sort of originally did. And I think that it may be that the competition between clones is something that we should try to figure out how we can study, because it may be that if we figure out the mechanisms that suppress clones, maybe what we can do is generate those in people and keep all the clones down over time. But we just don't understand. We don't understand how clones interact with one another. Right now, all we understand is that you see them there, you know, you take a picture in time and it's one clone, you do something and you take a picture at a different set, a different time, and it's a different clone. So we know that clones change, but we have no idea how they interact with one another. And so I think that is one layer of biologic complexity that most individuals have not thought about.
If these B cells that are myeloma stem cells, do these B cells have targets for myeloma treatment? For example, you know, we're always looking at surface antigens for which a drug can be developed that might cause cancer cell death and such. I think you said you've isolated some myeloma stem cells. Can drugs be developed to attack markers on these cells as well?
Yep. So that was, you know, when I was talking about these two antibodies that we've used, those are really specifically designed to go after the B cells and not the plasma cells. I think that what we're trying to do now is we're trying to find cell surface proteins that are on plasma cells as well as B cells. So you can get rid of both compartments at the same time using a single approach. And so we've been trying to figure that out. There are very specific biologic characteristics that I think lead to differential drug sensitivity. So one sort of prominent one is the use of something like bortezomib, which is a proteasome inhibitor. So that drug works the best in cells that are making a lot of protein, which are plasma cells. Plasma cells, they're little factories that are designed to make antibodies or the M protein. So they work really well against cells that are making a lot of protein. Well, B cells don't make a lot of protein, right? Their job is not to make antibodies. Their job is to make plasma cells. And so with bortezomib is typically not very active against B cells in myeloma, and we showed that a few years ago. But it's also not very effective in most lymphomas because, you know, the mechanism by which they kill is not something that's really super important in B cells. So there are differences just based upon being a different cell type that lends to drug sensitivity or drug resistance. And as you were saying, I think that there are surface antigens available, and it may be that if there are CAR T cells as pen used against B cells, and you combine those with CAR T cells against something that attacks myeloma cells, and there's a couple of different trials using CAR T cells against this antigen called BCMA. So maybe if what we do is combine CAR T cells, and maybe what we do is we get rid of multiple components or compartments in the disease, and maybe that will lead to longer remission. So that's something that we're very interested in pursuing.
Your CD19 example as to why the CAR T might have worked for a myeloma patient and CD19 being part of a B cell. Since B cells are kind of higher up in the tree, if you will, are there risks where other non-myeloma-related B cells also have CD19, and therefore you might be killing good stem cells as well?
Yep. So in the trials that are ongoing now and with CAR-19 T cells, one of the side effects, if you use them for leukemia, where CD19 is expressed, or for lymphomas, if it works, it gets rid of all CD19 positive cells, which are, as you were saying, they're both the malignant cells and they're the normal cells. Like one of the good things about the system, about the B cell system, is that you don't really need B cells, because what we could do is we can give you, you know, antibodies back, and that's giving people IVIG back. And so even if you got rid of all the normal B cells, you can still provide some of that immunity back in the form of, you know, an immune treatment. So there are other things, you know, where people have thought about using immune approaches where that's probably not as reasonable. Like if you get rid of, you know, brain cancer stem cells, but you also get rid of normal brain stem cells, that's probably not such a good thing. So we're lucky in the disease that we're studying, because if you got rid of B cells, if you got rid of all the blood plasma cells, you would still be okay. Like there's still a way that we could rescue that. But in many other cancers, that's not necessarily, unfortunately, the case.
Right. Thanks so much, and I'll turn it back to Gary.
Back, great questions. Matt Goldman, are you online?
Yes, I am. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Matt. Welcome.
Hey, thank you very much. Doctor, thanks for your time. I guess just some basic questions. As you're talking about relapse, are you putting relapse and refractory into the same pool, or is there a difference there, or different approaches towards each of those?
So I think it depends on the phase of the disease. So I think that very early on, when you can generate complete remissions in patients, then I think that the growth back is relapse. I think that as you go on in time and the drugs become less effective, that's when you develop resistance. And what we don't know in particular is what do stem cells do and what do they look like in very resistant patients. We know that the frequency, there are many more stem cells that we can find in patients who are much, much more advanced than those, let's say, you have smoldering myeloma. But we don't know yet what are the differences in stem cells in patients who have advanced disease that are refractory to many therapies versus those that we think are responsible for relapse early on. Like one of the thoughts is that CD19 is perhaps a good target early on for more patients, but may not be such a good target way down the road when you have cancer stem cells that may look less like B cells than they did in the beginning.
Okay. And you touched on this just a little bit before, earlier. In terms of when a patient does relapse, what's the thing that you're really looking for? Is it that they're symptomatic, or is it just purely what their numbers are looking like?
So right now, as a myeloma physician, what we look for is early on we look for biochemical evidence of relapse, and that's why we check M proteins and light chains periodically when patients are in a complete remission. Everyone has their own sort of trigger point when you need to retreat. I think that if you're just the evidence that the M protein is sort of coming back, yet there's no end organ damage, it may be prudent to just wait a little while before you start to treat. You definitely want to start treating before there is, things like kidney damage or bone damage. But typically you don't need to treat at the first sign that the M protein is back. And I think that trying to figure out what the pace of the disease coming back is and sort of how long it's been since you initially got therapy, those things come into play when we're deciding whether or not to retreat and when to retreat and what specifically we would treat with. That is totally different than the whole idea of stem cells. Like the idea of stem cells would be that if you're in a complete remission, what we're doing is we're going to try to track your stem cells rather than tracking M proteins and light chains, because those are the components that are more indicative of the differentiated cells. And if we're going to use stem cell therapies, it's probably the time to use them is when you're in a complete remission, not when you're relapsing. But that remains to be seen.
Okay. Very thought-provoking. This approach, is this sort of taking us away from transplants as a treatment for relapse patients potentially, or does that not really come into play?
I think that an important part of treatment for many myeloma patients is an autologous stem cell transplant. I think that there are other types of transplants, specifically allogeneic transplants, and allogeneic transplants do have a track record of being curative, but it's in a small proportion of patients. And one of the things we're trying to do at Hopkins is develop safer ways of doing allogeneic transplants, and we've come quite a long way. One of the big problems with allotransplantation is graft versus host disease, and we've reduced that down considerably. We've made it so that we do most of our transplants as outpatients now. We used to have an upper age limit of transplantation using allos, and then we got rid of that because we can make the procedure safer. So we've done those things in many diseases like AML and ALL and lymphomas, and so we're starting to study those approaches in myeloma. And the hope is that what we can do is it's likely that we can pretty safely get patients through the transplant, and then the issue becomes what do we do to try to keep it from coming back? And I think that's where the idea of stem cells comes into play, and so we're trying to develop clinical trials where we do allotransplants in patients, and we are following up with some sort of maintenance strategy after the transplant to prevent relapse. So those things are things that we are getting up and running, and hopefully we'll have a myeloma-specific allo trial up in the next year. But I think that the big hurdle for allotransplantation was really its safety. And I think we've
right.
pretty much overcome that. And so now I think that we can use the biggest benefit of an allotransplant, which is an entirely new immune system, to try to help fight myeloma and try to figure out ways where we can coax that immune system to be active against a recipient's myeloma.
Okay. And with an autologous transplant, is there a chance that when, and pardon my ignorance here, but when you're harvesting your stem cells, is there a chance that these myeloma stem cells are sort of with that harvest and you're simply you're putting them back in?
Yes, and so there's a nice study that was done by a colleague of mine, E.J. Chappell at MD Anderson, where what they did was they took stem cell grafts from myeloma patients, and you could find evidence of myeloma by sort of genetic testing. And what they did was they actually treated those stem cell grafts in the lab with two things. They treated it with bortezomib to try to get rid of any plasma cells, if plasma cells were there, and then they used this monoclonal antibody rituximab as well to try to clear out any stray myeloma B cells. What they found were that they could clean up the grafts where you didn't see any evidence of myeloma in the grafts, but what we don't know is does that truly prolong the time a patient stays in remission after an autologous transplant, or does it prevent people from relapsing after an autologous transplant? Because one of the things we found is that for sure we can detect myeloma stem cells after an auto transplant, and we specifically don't know whether it comes from the graft or whether the melphalan that we use doesn't kill them all. But we can certainly see them afterwards, and as in other situations, when we track them, oftentimes what we see is they start to go up in number before you detect an increase in the M spike or a recurrence in the M spike or abnormalities in the light chains. So we think that they sort of hang out for a while, then for whatever reason decide to become active again and start to grow. And so we're trying to figure out what keeps them dormant, because if you could keep them dormant forever, that would be great.
Right.
But we're trying to figure out those sorts of parts of the biology right now.
Right. Oh. Okay, and then just my last question here. Did you say that with each relapse, if a patient has multiple relapses, that the intensity of the relapse or the speed of the myeloma increasing is more intense with each relapse, if that makes sense?
It can be, like, if you, I think that the biggest thing, I think, is that the length of the remissions tend to be shorter between sort of later lines of therapy than they are after the first line of therapy, where you can keep patients in remissions for oftentimes for quite a long time. The rapidity that they come back, that the tumors grow back, is super variable, I don't understand why that is. Oftentimes, when you get more advanced cases of myeloma, they make much less M protein than they did at the beginning. So they're becoming less sort of mature in their plasma cell phenotype, because making protein is part of that phenotype. But the pace that typically when patients relapse later on is a little bit faster, but that's not a universal thing.
Okay. Well, thanks. That's all I have. I'll throw it back to Gary. Thanks again, Doctor. Appreciate
your
time.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. Really appreciate it. And, Doctor, what we usually do right now is see if we have some caller questions. So, Priya Menon, could you please see if we have any callers on the line?
Thank you, Gary. We have some questions sent in by our audience, Dr. Matsui. So I'll just go through them, and maybe we can get some answers here. One of our listeners writes in, what are the available clinical trials related to relapse prevention that I can enroll in?
So we have I think we have trials that are specifically targeting myeloma stem cells that are starting up within the next, probably the next 6 months or so. They're transplant-related trials. I think that there are other places that have very much tried to focus on preventing relapse and in a non-stem cell way, which is also, I think, an important strategy. And so there are many trials looking at maintenance strategies following induction therapy or following a transplant. And I think all of these are potentially ways of slowing down relapse and hopefully extending overall survival in the end. So we have a few, but there are many trials that are not, you know, outwardly or demonstratively going after myeloma stem cells, but those are ones that are maintenance trials, and I think that those are potentially important as well.
Thank you, Doctor. Another question is, could you please explain in layman terms how can telomerase pathway be useful in developing a drug that may prevent myeloma relapse? Do we have a molecule in the pipeline that can target this pathway?
Yes, so we actually did a very small trial with a drug called imetelstat. And it is a drug that inhibits the enzyme that makes telomeres. And so it inhibits telomerase. And that drug is, what we found was that if you gave the drug, we saw no effect on someone's myeloma. And these were pretty early-stage patients. They had detectable myeloma. We gave the drug. The myeloma didn't really change as far as M spikes or light chains. But if you – so since there was no change, the patients stopped the drug. And what we found was that if you waited a few months, then you can now see the M proteins kind of going down by themselves in a number of patients. So what we think is that maybe we were targeting the stem cells, but it just takes a while to see that effect because it's sort of a one-in-a-million cell type of effect. It ends up being that inhibitor has been tried in breast cancer. It's been tried in another hematologic malignancy called myelofibrosis. And there are efforts. The company, I think, had some difficulties that had generated the drug, and I think that it's been picked up by another pharmaceutical company, and I think that they're interested in pursuing that therapy in several diseases, and you know, we're hopeful that myeloma might be one of them. So there is a compound that people have used. There are some vaccines that are targeted against telomerase, which is this enzyme that makes telomeres. But it's I think it's a very attractive target, but it is one that we don't have great drugs against. We have, like I said, we have this one drug. It's been in the clinic. It's not entirely without toxicity. And I think trying to find better drugs against telomerase is, I think it's a viable approach. I think that many cancer stem cells depend on telomerase. Many cancers depend on telomerase. And so I think it could be a very potent anti-tumor approach, but I think we need to find sort of the right drugs and the right cancers to try the idea out in.
Thank you, Doctor. The next question is, could you please address research in curcumin and the supposedly more bioavailable Mervia in stabilizing disease and maintaining remission?
So there's a lot of data for the use of curcumin in many cancers. There's been a little bit of data studying it against pancreatic cancer stem cells or cancer stem cells in pancreatic cancer and breast cancer. We've never looked in myeloma. I think that it's not exactly clear what the mechanism of action is. I think that there are There's certainly trials ongoing. I don't know if there are any in myeloma in particular, but I think that I think that in general there's a lot of potential for natural compounds to be used as anti-tumor agents, and I think that it's the challenges are similar to the challenges for any other drug. Can you develop them and do the right clinical trials and get the right support to do those clinical trials? And I think that that's definitely an avenue that is attractive, but I think it's been difficult to find funding to do those trials.
Thank you, Doctor. That's all the questions that we have for you today. And I have to say this is very interesting and very hopeful for the myeloma community. We will be following your work here on CureTalks. So thank you so much for sharing this with us today.
Great. Thank you.
Gary, Jack, and Matt, thank you so much for your participation. The transcript and the recorded talk will be made available on CureTalks website. Please visit curetalks.com for details of upcoming talks. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you.